Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the boss, John Rurink, Jack Spencer. We're going to have Sylvia Santana, state senator from Detroit, join us here in just a minute. And also, later in the podcast, Bernie Porn and Steve Mitchell, a couple of veteran political pollsters, are going to be talking about what they're seeing right now in reaction to COVID-19 and also their current dynamic with racial relations and the protests and the destructive demonstrations we have seen in Lansing and elsewhere. Guys, given where we're at right now in the world and the situation with George Floyd, the protests, and then the reaction that we're seeing now from folks, I've been paying attention to where the leaders are, who is coming out and speaking and being kind of a unifying force to deliver a message, to bring people together. This kind of struck me as I went down to the Capitol on Sunday and watched these protests start to develop. And I didn't stay for the whole thing, and I didn't really stay for a terribly long time, but there was something that really struck me, is that in prior protests, and I don't really care who is doing the protesting, there's always been kind of a program. There's been a list of speakers. There's been a beginning time and an end time. And so that people knew that when, 2 o'clock came or 3 o'clock or whatever came, that people were going to disperse and everybody had kind of had their say and folks had articulated what they were feeling. Somebody in a leadership position was articulating what people were feeling. There was none of that at this particular protest. There was no program. There was no list of speakers. There was nobody speaking at a podium. It was a leaderless group with an endless time at which they could stay at the Capitol. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but what I'm saying, guys, is there seems to be a leadership void here. Nobody is talking about what the folks are feeling and being kind of a unifying front. I feel like there's an opportunity for somebody to step up and be that leader. And I wanted to get your guys' opinion on that.
I think one of the problems that we're experiencing and we're seeing as far as the void of leadership is, look, this issue, as painful as it is, as awful as the death of George Floyd was, the cause to protest, there's also a bad side for anybody who's partisan elected official, right? Coming down to hard law and order. If you are a Democrat, you got to be careful about coming down too hard on law and order. Our leaders have kind of gotten so far entrenched in their partisan positions. Look, I mean, we just went through 8 weeks of COVID-19 pandemic across the state, and our leaders can't even talk to each other. Take somebody who's willing to take a really big risk, like the sheriff in Genesee County, to sort of change positions, to jump out of his lane and try to do something different. And he changed the dynamic of that protest. He's got national attention for it. And that's the kind of risk your leadership has to be able to take. And our leadership at the state level, I don't feel like it really, in terms of protest, hasn't been there.
Yeah, I agree, Kyle. The problem is in our culture right now, it's a real negative that the risk-reward quotient there ratio is way off balance. Somebody can come out and say the most appealing, logical thing about a topic, and then 50% of the people, just with a choice of a certain word or the misinterpretation or anything else, you end up being excoriated by 50% of the reaction. It's a very tough situation to try to assert yourself as a leader, and then to try to do it over an issue that has been as volatile as this one, with a horrible tragedy, then compounded by more tragedy with not the protest, but what's happened along with the protest. I can see how anybody would be a little bit afraid to go out there and just start trying to say things that, if you're too soft, you may look weak. If you come across too hard, you may look too strong. I just think and it's really a sad commentary, but we really are at a point here where a lot of people are going to balk and say, who's going to jump all over me if I really say what I'm trying to convey?
Well, I'm taking a look at what Christopher Swanson here, and we mentioned the Genesee County Sheriff, and who knew the name Christopher Swanson until this past weekend? I didn't know it. I had to look it up. And yet he was on the Today Show today. He's got a story in the New York Times how a Michigan sheriff took off his helmet and marched with protesters. It seems like somebody has figured this out, a way to connect with people and to avoid tragedy. I'm surprised that more people haven't done it. And I understand the risk-reward factor, Jack, that you're talking about. I understand that it's a risk. But if you want to be a leader of people, and that's what the job of, let's say, even a U.S. Senate candidate or a governor or a lieutenant governor or anybody. I mean, if you've signed up for this job, and I understand that these are terrible times and it's very difficult, that you got to find a way to try and bring people together. And I'm glad that we found somebody who was able to do that. I'm just surprised that nobody else has given it a crack.
Well, I think you're right. And maybe it'll pan out that way. But the way things change, wait a week and see if what he said somehow has boomerang somewhere, because it just, the problem is that can happen whether it's justified or not. It's very hard to be a leader. It's very hard, right? I think it's always hard, but I think it's been multiplied by this cultural situation where you can say the most sensible, logical thing and it can still have end up with being contorted and turned into something you didn't even mean.
Now, that's a sad commentary, John. I mean, I hear what Jack's saying, and I guess it's painful in that he's right.
Politics is the new religion, and it's everybody's views, their position is right, and the other guy is totally wrong, and we're starting to hate each other because we don't agree with each other, and that creates powder keg.
All right. Well, with that, thank you, guys. Let's move on here and bring in Senator Sylvie Santana. Thank you for joining us, Senator.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So, Senator, let's start with obviously what's been going on this past weekend, the protests, the very angry reaction to George Floyd's death. I want to get kind of starting off your personal perceptions on what's happened, where you started and kind of where you are now as far as what you're feeling and what you're thinking.
Well, first of all, Kyle, I just want to give my condolences to the family of George Floyd and all of those individuals who have died wrongfully at the hands of our folks who are supposed to protect and serve us. I just want to say that first and foremost, but we're looking at the current circumstances that we're in as a state and obviously as a nation, there's a lot of underlining hurt and pain by people across this country that is really impacting what we see today here in our country with the rioting and the people expressing their, whether it's a peaceful protest or in some circumstances where we have individuals who are going beyond that. But I think that what you're seeing today is young people who are tired and people in general who are tired. If you think back to Rodney King, when that's been about 28 years ago, when people were protesting because of the way that Rodney King was treated by law enforcement. And really, when you look at that, Kyle, have you seen any real change in our country? You know, we haven't really seen any change around the systemic issues that we have. And I just think that with the current state of where we are today with COVID-19 and also with the situation with Ahmaud Arbery and others, been stewing for a very long time, and you know this is the pressure cooker that's exploding in our nation, and we have to do more to change the narrative.
I guess compare what you're seeing in Detroit versus other cities. Is it as bad? Is it not as bad? We're following far obviously through the newspapers, but you're there as part of the community. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that and what you're seeing in your community as far as reaction.
I think in my community, like I said before, people are hurting. Dealing with COVID-19 is one thing, so we're all idle. And so this is just a part of it. People are not working right now. And so when situations like this occur, it just really infuriates people even further. As I mentioned before, this was a long time coming. You know, this was a stirring of the pot, if you will, with the protesters. And they're struggling to make resolve with this issue. And when you have video surveillance of an individual who obviously was already detained by the cops, with officer having a foot on his neck, for 9 minutes when he was already detained, you have three other cops standing around watching this happen, which is a culture issue, in my opinion. Shame on them as well. This is unfortunate. And this is not the first time this has happened. There has to be more of training for law enforcement around these issues. And I think that's why Senator Irwin, you know, introduced a bill last week that makes all the sense in the world. We have to do mental health checks for our law enforcement, as well as make sure that they're getting the proper training. We have to make sure that we have a diverse law enforcement force. We have to make sure that when we have law enforcement, that they look and represent the state accordingly and equitably. And so those are things that we need to change. When you asked about my community, people are obviously expressing their opinions. A lot of, you know, you've seen a lot of peaceful protests downtown within the city. But then obviously there's a few situations where you have some looting and damaging of property, excuse me. But I don't think that represents Detroit. And I don't feel that what you saw downtown, if they're as minor as it is, was the local residents here in the city of Detroit. I think those were a few bad actors from other areas. They decided to act in a court in their own manner, which obviously doesn't make for a positive and peaceful protest.
I mean, this was a little different than some of these incidents we've had. It seemed to me like both the red side and the blue side, as far as media, immediately agreed this was murder and immediately agreed this was something terrible. And I think we use the word protesting, but to what extent does it detract from that? The people, I mean, to me, protesting is protesting, but breaking into windows and stealing liquor or setting places on fire, I'm not sure that's protesting. How much does that detract from what might have been an opportunity to have literally both sides agree on something, which is very rare nowadays?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you, Jack. I think that it takes away from the bigger message, which is we need to change some of the way things are structured systemically. And so I think that it's a distraction to the true message, which is how do we come together and how do we find true justice for these individuals who have been killed wrongfully?
As you were taking a look at what was going on, and you experienced kind of the protest from a different standpoint, and I'm talking about the protest on April 30, where we had a very different message at the Capitol, where you felt threatened that you had to wear a bulletproof vest on the Senate floor. Did you feel the same type of threatening reaction, or did you feel threatened in the same way that you felt, I got to take the same kind of step, that I got to wear a bulletproof vest here too?
Yeah, I felt scared for my life because here, quite frankly, the protest started before the 30th of April. If you recall, back on the 15th, when we were not in session, people were protesting at the Capitol. And at that time, they still had symbols of hate. They had Confederate flags, swastika, and nooses during that time, and semi-automatic rifles. And so that was just the precursor to what happened on the 30th. We are there to do the work of the people. And when you're sitting in that gallery and somebody's standing in the gallery with semi-automatic weapons and brandishing them, that is a problem. And so, yes, I did feel compelled to put on a bulletproof vest, and I still will do it to this day, despite who is protesting. If you're bringing guns into the Capitol for a situation where typically people are not in a positive manner of protesting, they're angry with their government, then absolutely I'm going to make sure that I protect myself so that I can get back home to first my family, but secondly, to continue to represent my district. We don't do mental health checks when it comes to guns in this country. And so you just don't know if people are going to be temperamental, and you don't know what is in the mindset of those individuals. Just like when you saw at Mandalay Bay, that gentleman went on, rented a room and started shooting down on a crowd of people who were at a concert. Those are true scenarios where you just don't know what is going to be the outcome. And until we as a state decide to put the necessary protections in place in the Capitol, I'm afraid that something bad is going to happen prior to us actually being proactive and doing what is right. But that's up to the leadership in the House and the Senate to make those decisions. You know, obviously the Capitol Commission has, you know, hired an attorney to help them decide whether to make that decision. But I think that truly that decision could have been made when they met recently.
So we're talking about session coming up. I mean, we're going to have session this week, and the protests could come back this week. And you're saying that you would bring your bulletproof vest if you knew that there were going to be protests at the Capitol this coming week.
if they're allowed in the Capitol, into the GAO, into the Capitol with their semi-automatic rifles, absolutely yes. It's sitting right under my desk.
Senator, I also want to talk to you about the tone and the tenure of the Senate right now. And you had a very passionate speech this past week on the Senate floor where you kind of talked about the tone and how things and the collegiality in the Senate has seemed to go south. Why do you think that is? Are people just really uptight now because of COVID-19? Is that the reason, or why is the tension so obvious?
You know, honestly, Kyle, that tension started back in lame duck. We obviously knew that we were going to have a Democratic governor, attorney general, and secretary of state. I believe that tension started then when the majority party decided to try to take away the a power of the attorney general as well as the governor. And so luckily, you know, the prior governor, Governor Snyder, had the foresight to veto those bills. So I think that tension started back then. I do believe that, you know, the Republican Party has been able to run the ship, if you will, with all three chambers being in their favor for the past 8 years. And that's not the case now. So it's been a challenge ever since. And, you know, I thought at the beginning of the year, you know, when we started 2020, we started in the right direction. We were working on bill packages such as raise the age, the asset forfeiture bills, really with a focus of criminal justice reform and working in a bipartisan fashion. Unfortunately, you know, national politics has really made it hard because it starts at the top. And so we're no longer at a point where we can buffer what's happening at the national level here in Michigan. And so I think that's also cause for a lot of what you're seeing today here in our Capitol and what's going on. And so I think the push over the edge for me was when Senator Zorn wore Confederate flag on his face, you know, and that really for me was a complete insult. And, you know, he dismissed it, lied about it, and then blamed his wife for that issue. I think that that also did not help the situation. And so what also is not helping the situation is that although the Capitol Commission has, you know, sought counsel for making the decision regarding guns in the Capitol, I also issued a letter along with Senator Geis for them to make a decision on the hatred symbols, the Confederate flag, the swastika, the nooses that people are using as protest symbols, if you will. I'm a Black woman from the South. And those symbols for me do not represent anything positive. You know, obviously it's a part of our history, but it does not represent anything positive for this country moving forward. As I mentioned before, it shows me that, you know, we still have a long way to go in this country. And that's unfortunate as well, especially considering that we're only three generations removed from really people owning people in this country. And so that's a real challenge for me as a person. But also the 14% of people, African-American individuals in this state. And so I think that a real true apology would have been warranted from him. But also I will say this, it's up to the leadership in that chamber as well to show a different sign of respect and diplomacy and really working together to move things forward. I think that elections have consequences, but I also feel that because it's an election year, we're seeing what we see right now, which is a lot of turbulence within our Senate floors. We have a flood in Midland. God bless my colleague over there, who's really, you know, really having to be all in and make sure that his constituents are represented well and make sure that they have the resources they need. We're dealing with a pandemic, we're dealing with COVID-19. These are all true, you know, real issues for a lot of people. People are unemployed right now. They're trying to figure out how they're gonna make ends meet in the near future. And so I think that all of this is really predicated on how we as lawmakers and leaders in this state work to make things right. And it starts with leadership and it starts with all of us and we have to put down sometimes the partisan politics to make those things happen.
I have a question, and I agree with you about that this started before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. But the part that I'm interested in, because my view of it's slightly different. A year ago, we had the agreement on the insurance stuff which I told my daughter who lives in Maine, I sent her the link because I've covered this over 20 years. I have never seen any situation where so many people on both sides were so happy and together on something. And I said, Sasha's my daughter. I said, I've never seen this before. And I think, unfortunately, I may never see anything like this again. But what happened after that, to the point by the end of the summer, the one thing you didn't mention is the personal relationships at the top, for instance, the majority leader and the governor, and how that crumbled as a lead-in to this whole situation then with the pandemic. And you got, I don't know how many people would blame the governor for not hanging on to whatever she wants to do for as long a time as she can, because they don't see eye to eye at all.
Yeah, Jack, I agree with you. I think that, you know, when the Senate Bill 1 passed the House and Senate, I think that was a time where we really had to band together. And, you know, after 40 years of having out of no fault reform and it not going in the right direction, we had to do something for the people. It's unfortunate that it takes for there to be the pressure of our constituents for things to happen. You're right. It is a relationship business. And you're right that those were times that, you know, people were willing to work together. But I question, you know, I know that there was a conversation about a road deal, but that never transpired in a way that it should have. And I think that's a trust issue. And so I think from the governor's standpoint, with her moving forward, she has to do what she has to do. And we're all dealing with a pandemic that we've never had the opportunity to actually experience in our lifetime. This is a first for all of us. And she knows that, and I can't speak for her, but I'm just saying as a woman, and if I was in her position, she understands that because of the way that things have transpired, that all she's going to get is pushback. She's making the executive decisions and providing executive orders to continue to make sure that the numbers go down, that we flatline this virus, that experts can make those decisions and do them diligently with the best knowledge that they have at the time. And so she has to, as an executive, do what she needs to do. Think about when Granholm was in office and she was the governor and we had a split in government. It was the same scenarios in many ways when you look back. In my opinion, is doing what she has to make decisions on behalf of the entire state. And when all you have is pushback, then you have to go in the manner that you can. Stubbornness and pridefulness is not going to help the situation. And if we're going to lead, then we have to, you know, put down our own feelings and make sure that we're doing what's right for the people.
Going back in history, in the 1918, second wave of that pandemic was the worst, and it came after a series of parades following the end of World War I. The national news media is starting to cover their concern that, and public health officials concerned that all these protests might have caused that second wave in this case to come about. How concerned are you about that? Detroit certainly was very heavily hit by COVID-19 earlier. It's been coming down. Are you afraid the protests are going to kind of bring it back?
Having individuals commingle in close quarters and spaces as they have with the protests, not only down in Detroit, but also here in Lansing and throughout the state, it is concerning for all of us because obviously there's no social distancing in those spaces. And it's not only a concern in that manner, but also as we transition back to trying to get our economy back and going, we have to make decisions that are going to be best for our constituency. And so it's going to be a slow crawl when you think about it. And if we shall see what happens based off of what we see this, you know, these upcoming weeks with individuals who have been in close quarters with others. I think that people are trying to do the right thing by wearing masks in those spaces and trying to protect themselves. But like you said, it is a concern of mine. And we definitely have to make sure that we continue to send that message home in public service announcements and also continue to enforce it. I think that people, unfortunately, in those spaces have kind of said, you know, they kind of threw their hands up with COVID-19 because at this point people are tired and they've been at home for almost 2 months. And, you know, that's something that's unprecedented.
Senator Sylvia Santana, we've already taken up a lot of your time. We appreciate that. Is there anything else that you haven't said, we haven't asked about, that you would like to get off your chest?
Yeah, you know, I definitely would. I know that, you know, this past week, you know, obviously you said I had some strong words. And for me, it's never about attacking the person. I'm never going to attack my colleagues, but I am going to attack the issue. And I think that, you know, that's something that you will continue to see in me is diplomacy, because somebody has to be the bigger person. And I'm hoping that, you know, at some time, you know, that we continue to try to build this bridge, that, you know, sometimes, you know, you have to be that person to lead. And I just want to give my colleague, Senator Broom from the Upper Peninsula, kudos, because he called and apologized for his shrill comment. And that's what it's going to take for us as leaders to be able to come together, band together, and do the make the right decisions for the entire body, 10 million people that live here in the state of Michigan. It's going to take putting down partisan politics and the fact that we have an election to be able to make some things happen. In this day and age, when you have so many people who are hurting and looking at the past and looking at the continual issues with the connection between law enforcement and the general public, there's going to have to be some bridge building. And so we have to look at legislation like what my colleague, Senator Irwin, is trying to put together with MCOs and making sure that law enforcement is trained. We're going to have to try to make sure that they are also properly paid, because you just don't want, you want the best of the best in your law enforcement, and you want people who really want to truly do the job and do it well. And we have to make sure that culture policy is not eaten by culture in these departments, and making sure that people really understand that their job is to protect the community and do the right thing. And we have to hold each other accountable at the end of the day, because accountability is what is going to keep us moving the needle forward. And when it comes to humanity, we have to look at each other as people first and foremost, put down those biases that, you know, generations past have has plagued us all, and really look at people for people, because at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to, is making sure that we as people can move forward and put down our biases to do so. So thank you.
Senator Sylvia Santana, appreciate your time today and appreciate you being on the MERS podcast.
All right. Thank you.
Joining us now on the podcast are two veterans in Michigan polling and political polling, Steve Mitchell and Bernie Porn. Guys, I appreciate you joining us on the podcast here today. You're both joining us via Zoom. And Steve, I want to talk with you first and ask you the first question here on how the public is viewing what Donald Trump is doing in regards to the COVID-19 reaction, and how the polling shows the governor, Governor Whitmer, doing, and where you're seeing the momentum right now.
And I have not really been asking that question per se, but I think you see how the voters have been reacting to President Trump in his favorable, in his job approval. The same thing for Governor Snyder. And what we're seeing essentially is that the governor's up around, you know, and I have not done anything in about a week. And these are a bunch of state legislative districts in competitive districts around the state. And what we saw really is Trump's approval is in the low 40s. The governor's way up in the mid 60s. So she is much more popular at this point than President Trump. Trump, I think, has not done a good job. I think the voters perceive he's not done a good job on handling COVID, whereas the governor, because she is protecting life, is. Now, I think, and Bernie may have more information, I think as this goes on, as Michigan becomes one of the few states to still have the restrictive regulations that we have, as we begin to see the high unemployment numbers, that's going to change for Governor Whitmer. But for right now, the governor seems to be in a pretty good position, and Trump not so much.
Are you seeing the same thing, Bernie? And why do you think that is? Why do you think the governor is doing better in the polling than the president?
Well, we're seeing the same thing, and we haven't done a poll since January, so I'm looking actually at the most recent I see is the Fox News survey, and they have in the job rating category 63% for Whitmer overall job rating and 47% for Trump. In his handling of the coronavirus, 59% say that it was too slow. And I think people understand that January and February, he had been warned about the potential problems, and largely he ignored it and said that it was going away. And I think people understand that. When you look at how people are reacting to Gretchen Whitmer, I think that is largely because of fear of catching the coronavirus. And that fear extends to all populations, notwithstanding the fact that in Michigan, you have 95%, and I think I got this from MERS, 95% saying that it is age 50 and over, and that includes 42% in the 80s, 27% in the 70s, 18% in the 60s, 8% in the 50s. And so it is a problem for older folks, and that's probably why, I don't know about Steve, but I've been kind of hunkered down in my home for the last couple of months, other than to go out for blood tests, why I've been here. And I do not want to get that, and I think the same kind of fear is out there among the public, and that is dictating the belief that Gretchen Whitmer's guidelines and rules are not too restrictive. In the 50s, I think 59% said that they are not too restrictive, and only about 30% said that they are. One thing that I think we are ignoring is that most of the healthcare experts from Fauci and others believe that there is going to be a second wave. And if there is a second wave, how is that going to affect the perception of the economy? Right now, people say they are willing to wait, even though it is damaging the economy. And that is across, this even up among Republicans, but it is fairly very strong among Democrats and even independents. And so the question is, if there is a second wave, and I think most people think that there will be, why then the economy still is suppressed, I think, as a concern. And even if it isn't, if the economy becomes a concern, the question is whether or not the economy will start to improve, which Donald Trump can take some credit for or will attempt to, or whether or not it will still remain suppressed through the election. Most economic experts say that this may go on for some period of time, and many businesses will never come back. And so the economic problems are going to continue. And all of those 42 million people who have filed for unemployment, they're not going to be going back to work before the election in any great numbers. At least I don't think so.
So Bernie,
and who are they going to blame? Are they going to blame Governor Whitmer, or are they going to blame President Trump? I would argue that they're ultimately going to, they're going to, I think, blame the governor, merely because it has been so restrictive here. Look, I understand the governor's certainly wanted to take care of people. Oh, that's what she's saying, and I take her at her word. But what transpires as a result of what's taken place in Michigan, when you see states like Georgia and Florida, when you see 21 states who have in one level or another eased way back on the restrictions, and they're not seeing an increase in COVID beyond what they had before they let go of some of the restrictions, then I think people are going to say, why did Michigan wait so long, when data shows us that even if you ease up on the restrictions, you're not going to see a significant increase, if an increase at all, in the cases of COVID. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that debate moves forward. And again, as we look at things in September and October, not today when we're still in the heat of it, as people begin to get out and move around, talk to people. I see it where my wife was at a yarn shop and she walked in and the woman didn't have a mask, and my wife said, "Do you mind if I take off my mask?" And they both did. They didn't know each other. I think that the, and my wife is, above 60, so therefore she would fall into that category of being somewhat concerned. But we're in a fascinating new situation we've never had before, and I think it's difficult to say, you know, this idea you mentioned, if the economy starts going from where it is and gets even a little bit better, can Trump take claim that he's put it back together again after the nadir? We also have another factor. We all talk about Trump right now versus Trump. Right now, Trump's running against Trump. He's not running against Biden because Biden has been almost non-existent on the campaign trail. Eventually, after the conventions, after Labor Day, it's going to be Trump versus Biden. And Biden has his own unique set of problems. Once Trump is not running against Trump, but he's running against Biden, then Trump's numbers go up, the base comes up, and he brings in some independents.
Do you think he could possibly win Michigan?
Do I think Trump can win Michigan?
Yeah.
No.
Oh.
I agree.
Why
is it? It's going to be difficult for him to win Michigan. He's not doing well among independents. His vote to reelect, we have him the last time at 34%, and the party ID is, I think, 42 for the Republicans, and in the matchups, he's getting about 41 or 42%. In the Fox News poll, Biden was leading by 8. In the most recent ABC national poll, among all adults, Biden was leading by 13 points. Among registered voters, he was leading by 10, whereas Hillary did not get about 15%. And so if that continues, he is suggesting that Biden needs to get Elizabeth Warren as a running mate, which I think brings a whole lot of other problems in terms of appeal to independent voters, and brings back into consideration some of the things that as a strong Bernie supporter and having identical positions, that it would enable Trump to claim socialism and all of the other things that goes with that. In terms of her positions on some issues, such as Medicare for All, which is not supported in most of the polling that I've seen.
I'd like to hear your guys' reaction to what impact, if any, the president's conduct over the last 4 or 5 days of these protests following the death of George Floyd was, in terms of the tweet, when the looting starts, the shooting starts. Has he done himself serious damage in his conduct in the last few days, or do you think this will be forgotten?
I think he is trying to appeal to his base by having more tweets dealing with the law and order approach to those who are protesting and doing damage. And obviously that is not helping the Democrats in terms of their positions on this and in their efforts to try and focus on the death of Floyd. Well, if he were to try to deal with those instances where there is excessive police use of force, that might be helpful to him. But if he is just appealing to the far right in terms of his actions and words, why, I think that could haunt him.
See, I think he's got a bigger problem. I think he's been trying to placate African Americans, which is why he stayed out of this problem. When you take a look, and I was watching what was happening in Washington last night, and you see the St. John's Church being set on fire, you see the damage being done. I think he would be far better positioning himself if he were to put the hammer down and just put incredible force behind stopping the rioting and stopping the fires and stopping the destruction. I suspect his base and a lot of independents don't like to see the destruction that they're seeing all over the nation. And, you know, to the point of he keeps talking about having the states use the National Guard. If he federalized the National Guards in some places and pushed them in to stop this looting, I think that would benefit him much better, not only with his base, certainly with his base. We know it would do that. But I think it would benefit him with independents who are looking at this and saying, oh my God, what's happening, including a lot of African Americans whose houses are being destroyed. Now, are liberals going to be angry? Of course. We all know this was horrific. This was the most incredible example of police brutality I've ever seen. And this guy deserves to go away. And I'm glad he's now been charged with first degree murder since he knew him. We all agree. But I think what hurts Floyd is the fact that these riots are taking place and they're being done by radical anarchist groups and not by the people who want to peacefully assemble and have marches to demonstrate their concern about what the police officers do to African Americans. But boy, that's getting lost by the rioting, because middle America is looking at that. Joe Sixpack, and mostly white, but even some African Americans are saying, my God, we can't have this type of rioting in our country, and somebody's got to put the hammer down.
Mayors are saying the same thing, with a couple of exceptions in terms of some of the rhetoric, but most of them have been saying that this violence and the damage to property and everything that's going on has to stop. And I was pleased to see that.
Yeah, I mean, we can't have it's not a nation without laws. So how that's going to impact things, I don't know. But this is going to go on for a few more days. This is not over yet. We saw it in Lansing yesterday. We've seen it in Detroit. We're seeing it all over the country.
So you think that Trump's not putting more force is actually hurting him. And what do you think about going forward here for Trump? Is there a real risk that he pulls out of Michigan at some point, Steve, and leaves Michigan Republicans in a real bind, like McCain, let's say?
I don't think so. I think Trump has always believed he could win here. He won it by 10,000 votes. You look at the poll data and the exit poll data, and I looked at it extensively. At the end of the day, he won because of Jill Stein and because of Gary Johnson. They peeled off enough votes for him to do it. The voter turnout in 2016 was almost identical to 2004. And in fact, Trump got fewer votes than George W. Bush did in losing the state. What happened is you had these third party candidates sucking the vote away. And when you take a look at where the vote came from, 8% of those people, 18 to 29, voted for Gary Johnson or Jill Stein. I mean, those were all votes that would have gone to Hillary Clinton and would have been enough. African-Americans did not vote in the numbers that they did in 8 and 12 when there was an African-American candidate for president. So Trump won, really. And then the final question on the poll is, if it was a two-way race, who'd you vote for? And Trump loses by 4%. Michigan's about a 3.5% to 4% Democratic state on an average day in a general election, especially for president. So he's going to have a great difficulty. Again, it's too early to say. There's too much that's going to happen. And part of that too much to happen is going to be Biden is going to be out there. Biden has made a lot of mistakes, and there's reason to believe that he does have some cognitive problems from what you're watching and from what you're seeing. So when Biden and Trump are running against each other, then that changes the race instead of Trump running against himself.
I would not suggest that that Biden has any more cognitive problems than Trump does. I'm sorry.
Steve Mitchell from Mitchell Research and Communications and Bernie Porn from Epic MRA. I'd like to thank you guys for taking some time today and joining us on the podcast. And that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to Senator Sylvie Santana for joining us earlier in the show, and Bernie Porn and Steve Mitchell, AT&T for sponsoring this and all our other podcasts, John and Jack, as always. And until next week, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care. Fight the power. What we got to say.
Fight the power. Come on. Yo, check this out, man.
Okay, talk to me about the future of Public Enemy.
Future of Public Enemy got a...